Welcome. You're listening to the Board Games and Beer Podcast.
Welcome back to the Board Game and Beer Podcast. This is episode 3. I'm your host, Vel, and I am going to be joined by my co-host, Isabel, this week. So I want to extend and say, may the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you too, Vel.
Okay. And the other thing I want to mention too is the theme that you heard at the beginning and we play throughout the show is conducted by the astonishing Andrew Allen, who can be found at Keys with Soul. We do throw that in our links on our webpage. So what has been happening? Well, first of all, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here. It's a new voice and everything to bring in. And so what's been happening with you this last week as far as games go and so on?
I went to the traditional board games night over at Jeff's house and had a bit of celebration because I had some good news. Had my first Guinness in forever. Mm-hmm. And I think it helped because I kicked everyone's butt at Jackass.
Okay. All right.
And then we had what was it? What's the Sunday games called?
Just the Board Game Blitz.
Yeah, just the Board Game Blitz on Sunday, and did pretty well then, too. So, can't remember what we played, though.
Okay. Well, didn't you guys play, like, Carcassonne? And
yeah, we did play Carcassonne, and I kicked everyone's butt by 2 points.
There you go. See, yeah. So it must have been, so it was a good week for gaming for you.
Yeah,
then,
it was.
In other words, well, that's good. I think, at least for me, God, I had a lot of stuff going on. It was actually, I had, like, seems to me like a marathon run there for like 4 days. So it was like Wednesday we had our the Comic Kingdom one.
Yeah.
Went to that. And then Thursday we had our God, I can't even think of that. The Thursday night, the round table games.
Yes.
Which the round tabletop games, which we had. So we went and played that, played a game there, and then Friday night went to played Star Wars X-Wing Miniatures, which I guess is kind of appropriate for this weekend, Sunday, yes, and so on. So that fit really well. I did really well on that, actually. Played this guy and just whomped him. I got lucky with the die rolls. That's all it was. It wasn't any skill involved in that whatsoever. And then yesterday we had the also over at Comic Kingdom Open Gaming and played a couple of really fun games in there. One of them was called The Agents, this little card game that I thought was really, really interesting. It was orientation with playing these agents and trying to collect these points, and you kind of partnered up with somebody next to you, and you you could do different things, but it was the orientation of the card. So if you played the card one way, the person to your left or right got that benefit, and then you got something. So you had to kind of, you know, weigh that and whatever. And so you're collecting these things and buying stuff. But it was really, really a cool little mechanic game. I think I'm going to have to pick that one up. We definitely got to start bringing that one out a little bit more. So you kind of talked about it. I don't think I did a lot of drinking, though, I'm afraid, with a lot of mine, which isn't good. You know, we're talking about that stuff on the show, and I don't think
I'll
did a lot of
it up for you.
Okay, all right. Well, that sounds good. Okay, so what we'll do with that? I mean, is there any other thing you want to kind of shout out? I think we'll get in, but any other kind of shout outs or anything you might want
to? Congratulations to the Transylvania.
Absolutely.
I heard they're doing well.
Yep, they are kicking some serious butt, and we'll definitely talk about that a little bit more in the show. Yeah, so I'm really pleased to see that thing getting going. So anyway, what we'll do, we'll head on into our first segment, which is called On the Calendar. Okay, so we are going into what meetups are coming up for our group and what we may be playing or doing. So we'll give you a real quick rundown as to the meetups that we've got coming up on our calendar. So the first one that we've got coming down the pipe is the Board Game Blitz, and that will be on May 11th.
And I will see everyone, hopefully, at Round Table Games on May 15th.
Okay, and then we've got a little bit of a lag here for this one. We haven't done this one in a while, but our Learn a New Board Game then is going to be on June 8th.
And then we have Comic Kingdom Open Gaming on Wednesday night on May 7th.
Okay, that's coming this week. And then on Comic Kingdom Open Gaming, we have that on Saturday, May 10th.
Mm-hmm. And then we have another traditional game night plus beer on May 23rd. And for those of you very interested, I recommend getting your RSVP in early because that always fills up.
Yep, it sure does. Yeah, that one's like, I think, probably one of our more popular ones I think we have now.
Yep.
Got another Star Wars X-Wing Miniatures game coming up on May 16th.
And then we have Arkham Horror in Reno. That's Phil's bag, so unfortunately he's not here, and we haven't been able to get a hold of him in regards to that, just because everyone's been busy. It's that time of year.
Right. So we'll have to get together with him and see what he's got in plan for that. He usually, I would imagine he'll probably throw something in there, but to fill in for the Learn a New Board Game.
Yeah, it's always a Sunday he picks. So.
Yeah, so there's a lot of Sundays in there, but between now and June 8th that could probably possibly fit in there. And our last one, which is a new one, isn't it? Well, maybe we'll just talk about this one of those, is the Viticulture Tournament and Wine Tasting, which is May 9th, which is this Friday. So are you signed up to go there?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, yeah, which is a really good thing. And at least from what I understand of that, isn't it something that Jeff was with the maker of the game or something wanted to get a tournament or something going with it, and then he says, well, what can we do? And I go, well, it's a wine game. Let's have a wine tasting. And then the guy goes, oh, that's a brilliant idea. You know, and
I love you guys for coming up with that. Because as someone who enjoys wine and, you know, everything to do with wine tasting will be fun. I have a feeling I will need a DD that night, but that's okay.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I think that one's going to be interesting, and that's a really cool game.
Yes, it is.
You've played it a few times before, haven't you?
I played it once, and I really enjoyed it. It was a little difficult to get a handle on at first, but once I did, I was like, okay,
yeah,
I got this.
Yeah, it's got a lot of moving parts, you know, because you're basically... And if people aren't familiar, maybe we could just chat about that game here a little bit, since it's kind of a board games and beer podcast, but maybe wine in this case. You know, essentially, you're you know, kind of cultivating a field, growing grapes, crushing the grapes, creating wine, and then, you know, kind of gaining victory points from that. And then they've got a bunch of different mechanics and stuff in there. And of course, you're collecting money, and of course, you're getting a hold of these people and events and things that can, you know, assist you and whatever. And so then it really comes down to when, because it's in essentially two seasons, right?
Yeah.
You have like a summer season and then a winter season. And essentially what you have to do is you really got to coordinate how you're placing, because it's kind of a worker placement game.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a bit of strategy and a bit of chance as well.
Yep. There sure is. And stuff like that. And I don't know what, the few times I played it, I guess one of the strategies I kind of work on is I always try to get all the little knick-knack things, like upgrading my, because you have a cellar you can upgrade and you can do some stuff out in the field, and I always get like that yoke thing where you can plant extra stuff, because there's a limited amount of things that people can put stuff in. So if they take them and you're not watching what's going on and going, oh, well, I'm going to go and plant fields or I'm going to harvest, and there's only a couple spots available, and then they take them, you know, you're screwed unless you do that. So I always like that yoke one where you can plant or harvest or whatever it is every time. So I tend to kind of try to go for those, but that always involves money. So you're always spending your currency and everything. So, yeah, that's a really cool game. That's going to be really interesting to kind of see how that plays out. And I think definitely on the next podcast we'll talk about, you know, kind of how that all came to be.
And, Val, I would just like to thank you for giving me your strategy, so now I can kick your butt.
Yeah, that was brilliant. That's actually a really good thing of mine, isn't it?
I have a feeling you'll be plying me with lots and lots of alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. I just go, no, here, have another glass.
Handicap.
Exactly. It works really well that way. All right, so I guess the last thing we want a little plug on this would be... obviously, our RageCon, which is coming up on June 27th and the 29th at Circus Circus. We talked about a lot about this on the previous podcast about going through the War Horn, and we'll have that link up on our webpage once again, so that people can access that or whatever. But then the other thing too, maybe we want to kind of go through some of the registration stuff that's still there. And as far as I know, it's the 30th of May is the cutoff point, if that's correct. I mean, last time I've talked with the people that are organizing it, that's what they're doing, because I know he pushed it up a little bit.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I haven't double-checked, but I need to, since I need to get on that.
Yeah. So remember, we've got a 3-day pass. It's $20 early and then $30 regular. And what? Then we got the 3-day pass, $30 early, $35 regular, $40 at the door. I'm so kind of confused about what
I was about to ask what exactly that meant.
$30 early, 3-day pass.
Oh, is the Circus Circus guests separate for if you're staying at the hotel then?
Right. Oh, okay. It must be. That's exactly what it is, Doy. Well, would help if I could read it.
It's not necessarily nice for us locals who aren't going to be staying at Circus Circus.
So those of you who are coming in,
talk to somebody about that one.
Yeah, so those of you who are coming in, you're getting a much better deal than the people that are here.
And working.
Yeah, exactly. So, now what's the other one we got there?
The Friday only pass is $10 early, $15 regular or at the door.
Yeah, and then
so not too bad.
Yeah, and then the Saturday only is $20 early and then 25 regular or at the door.
Yeah. And then if you only want to come on Sunday, it's $15 early or $20 regular or at the door.
Right. So I would assume that... I'm just saying, if you're looking on this stuff, it just seems kind of confusing. Because it's $15 early, I would assume, with that one there. Or you just come... Because it says $20 regular. If you signed up early, it's $15.
Yeah.
Is that how I'm interpreting that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of helps to put a little bit better stuff in the show notes, I guess, with that. Just putting $15/$20 doesn't work so well.
Well, just take this information as what we have now, and if it changes, exactly. We'll let you know.
Exactly.
We might beat the organizers into giving us a better deal.
Yeah,
but, you know.
Exactly. So that sounds good.
I guess we probably shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably not a good idea.
We're letting them know our plans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's probably not a good idea.
And we'll accidentally tell everyone our world domination plans.
Exactly. Yeah, we keep doing this. Putting the foot in. It's all started with me. It's my fault. All right, so what we're going to do, we're going to go into In the Pipeline for our next segment. Okay, so... This is the segment where we're looking at games that are coming out, and I definitely want to do kind of a follow-up on Transylvania, which launched this week. And so if we take a look at that thing, wow, that's pretty amazing. So this launched, how many days ago was that? 3 days ago, looks like?
Yeah.
May 1st. Yeah. Is when they Jamie and Lauren finally got this game off the ground. You know, if you look at, and I tell you, the Kickstarter page is just fantastically laid out. But boy, did they a great first day, as I recall. It was somewhere. I mean, they're shooting for 25,000, and where do we got them sitting at right now?
21, close to 22,000.
Yeah, already, and then they've only been 3 days that they've got. So I think that's really encouraging. I know they were super nervous.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing as this thing was getting launched. And I was getting some photos of them sitting next to the computer and, you know, just the angst. I mean, they're just both just intently staring at the screen, you know, understandably. They poured a lot of effort into this thing. So, you know, and then they're shooting for these, you know, hopefully really want to get some people involved in this because I'd like to start hitting some of these really cool stretch goals that they have. Which are going to be, what do they got on here for stretch goals? Their first stretch goal at 30,000 is going to unlock a couple more adventurers, which is going to be who now?
The Big Game Hunter and the Witch Hunter.
Yep, and then that's going to be another one of their things where people can have their likenesses put on those cards, so that adds it. And then when they get to the 35,000 gold, they're going to, looks like they're going to throw in a bunch of upgraded cards. Event cards and new transformation cards, it looks like, and some new knowledge cards.
Looks like a slight Harry Potter throwback in there with the basilisks.
Yes, exactly. I thought that was cool. I was looking at that too. And then the third stretch goal at 40,000, what are they doing with that one?
Another unlock adventurers 9 and 10 seems to be the sleuth and one to be yet known, perhaps.
Oh, cool. Sweet. Yeah, and there's new wood pawns or something, two heavier ones or whatever. And then if they get to the fourth stretch goal, they're going to throw in another two adventurers.
Oh, sorry, that was the fourth one. I skipped the third one.
Oh, yeah, it's the upgraded pawns. Oh, okay. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Well, I think we're all right with that. So, yeah, the fourth one was, the two, just like you two, they mentioned the sleuth and somebody else. Fifth is, what are they going to do with that one?
Custom plastic insert for the game box.
Right, cool. Yeah, that looks cool. And then they even go into a six. Well, I didn't even realize they threw all these other ones. So upgraded character cards, it looks like. And then their seventh is,
I want that too.
Yeah, we got to push that. The people, come on, you've got to get on this thing.
Just so you know, the seventh stretch goal, since we're getting all excited and neglecting to mention it to you, is monster miniatures.
Yep, exactly. So that's where we're getting excited as we're looking at that. So vampire, werewolf, and a zombie, it looks like. That's going to come in there an inch and a half, it looks like, tall, based on the portrait of each monster. Ooh, that really looks cool. Come on, people. You got
to
get on this.
I might have to just order some of the miniatures just for jewelry, because I make gaming jewelry all the time and such, and it'd be really cool to just wear that stuff.
Oh, yeah. That would be cool. But we got to get that. They've got to get that goal, though,
yeah,
first.
Yeah, so everyone help out, please.
Yes.
Help get on add this. To my jewelry collection and your gaming fun.
Yeah, exactly. See? Everyone wins. And then I think the other thing we're going to mention, too, is the Evolve, the game of Unnatural Selection.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, this literally looks like a cool game. Well, this one's finally ended. This was a couple of days ago. So Andrew Rader, you know, did, I think, a lot better than he anticipated. He had a $2,500 goal, and he wound up funding for $8,451.
Yes.
Which is really nice. And I know he evidently stuck some extra stuff in there. I think he made it to the fourth stretch goal for him off of his. So yeah, if we reach, well, he made the 7,500, so that's kind of cool. So all the Kickstarter backers are going to receive 10% off any future expansion and release.
Congratulations to you backers.
Yep, exactly. I was one of those. I had to jump all over that thing. I thought that was really cool. This one's supposed, I mean, when does he have this as a release date? I think it was like about the middle of the summer. It's looking, if I remember correctly. Yeah, shipped by June.
Awesome. So nice. I'll have time to play test and figure out if I can use it for class.
Yep,
I might just
exactly.
use it for class just for the heck of it.
Yep. I wonder if he's still going to have to get a hold of him, whatever. But, you know, they did have this bulk pack where you could buy a bunch of them, like 5 copies of the game without all the frills and everything.
Oh, awesome.
So that you could use it, you know, in a teaching setting or something like that. Because he did get a lot of, you know, and while I was talking to him in the interview and talked to him after and been in communication with him, he was getting a lot of teacher
Andrew input. If you are listening to this, on behalf of all the educators around here, thank you. We love you.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, this is the kind of stuff we want to bring in there. So that's really going to be cool to see that. I'm glad that funded and everything. So, and I know a lot of our, there's been several listeners to the show that I've talked to, and this has been one of the games that they've really been fired up over, actually. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, God, I got that.
It's going to be at RageCon, correct?
Well, if he gets it out in time, and he did speak, and I will do some more follow-up with him, and I know he's in the process of moving.
Okay.
You know, because he's back east, and he's moving out west.
Ooh,
so
he's joining us.
Yes, he's
joining
coming
the dark
out.
Side.
Yes, he's joining the dark side. He's coming out to the west coast. So, but he's joining the dark side. I saw that's a nice little reference for today. Yeah, May the 4th be with you. We were talking about
my little brother would be so proud.
Yeah, we were talking about how we had to lace things like that in there, and I think we just kind of stumbled upon that one.
Well, coming from the east coast myself, well, more the Midwest, I can definitely say there's definitely a difference in attitude, and mm-hmm. everyone out east is like, oh, everyone out west is horrible. Horrible. And
yeah.
If they're horrible, then Darth Vader, I salute you. I'm with you.
Yeah, so we're going to have to do a little bit of follow-up with him on that. But I know when he was coming out here that he did mention that he may see if he could make it to RageCon, so it's kind of cool. I'm going to have to prod him on that a little bit more. So I think with that, we're going to go into next is that we have a interview on tap for you again in this episode with Morgan from Give a Geek a Game, and she has a bunch of great stuff to talk about. So we're going to launch into that interview, and we will be back as soon as that is over. Welcome to the Board Game and Beer Podcast. I have a special interview tonight with Morgan of If You Give a Geek a Game blog. And so I would really like to welcome her to the show. So welcome, Morgan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You've just started this blog, and we'll kind of get into some of that thing. And why I'm bringing you on is because obviously you're a big board gamer, and so I'm going to kind of pick your brain about a bunch of those kinds of things. But why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a background of maybe why you started the blog and maybe a little bit about yourself, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. I'm a longtime geek. I really kind of fell into board gaming after Will had this great post about 3 or 4 years back about how he played Pandemic and it was the most fun he ever had losing a game. So I started annoying my friends, hey, play this with me, play this with me, play this with me. And then we completely fell into it. Of course, Tabletop launched around that time 3 years ago. And so we went from Pandemic to Settlers, Settlers to Ticket to Ride. And from Ticket to Ride, the collection just exploded.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Around that time, I started going to cons, too. I went to my very first Comic-Con in Kansas City and kind of discovered the board game room there. And I realized that there's this entire world of people out there that do what I love to do, and I want to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I really hit the con scene heavy, did 3 or 4 board game cons, and If You Give a Geek a Game is really my way of kind of giving back. I'm doing reviews. I'm doing a little bit of advice to all the stuff that I really wish I had known when I got into it. You know, how not to come down with con crud after you've been packed in a room full of strangers for
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
3
mm-hmm.
days, 3 nights.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, that obviously seems to be a big
deterrent of that, isn't it? I mean, you hear people about, you know, getting sick when they go to these things and, you know, all that kind of thing. So if you're giving advice like that, if you're bringing cures to people, you might be onto something there, because that always just seems to be a lot of people. They, you know, I don't know. It's never, I've been to a few of these things and I never seem to get it. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just staying away from the people that have it or something like that. So
that, or when you work with the public a lot, you kind of build up a natural immunity too, because you're just, you deal with it day in, day out. So, you know, a crush full of people doesn't affect you or me in the way that it would affect, you know, someone who kind of has a more quiet office type job.
Exactly. So. Well, it might be too, I think, when you, I would think it'd have to do with some of the sleeping habits and stuff like that you get, and with those sorts of things, and not eating right, and, you know, a whole bunch of
things. 6-2-1.
Right. I was reading that on your blog. You're going to have to talk about that. In fact, why don't you just go expand what you mean by 6-2-1?
6-2-1 is a rule, and I'm not sure who imparted it to me, but it's a rule that I've heard kind of quoted around cons a lot, and it's something that I try to live by. No matter where I am, what I'm doing at a con or like on Joko, 6 hours of sleep a night, that's pretty much the minimum requisite for a human adult. 2 good meals a day. This doesn't include snacks. This doesn't include getting a candy bar out of a vending machine. This is actually 2 good meals where you sit down for a period of time away from what you've been doing and you talk with the friends you've made. And 1 shower a day.
Mm-hmm.
Con crud and gamer funk are the 2 things that a lot of people really complain about.
Mm-hmm.
And the shower for me, while it does keep me smelling sweet, really it's kind of about just letting it all kind of wash away and calming me down before I do go get those 6 hours of sleep. So.
I gotcha. Yep. Well, that's always good advice, I guess. Yeah, that's the thing I always hear. I don't know. I've been to a few cons, and that doesn't, maybe I'm just avoiding something, but I guess I haven't really experienced a lot of that sort of thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm just, my sense of smell's not working or something. That might be an advantage, I guess.
Evolutionary advantage.
Yes. That might be one of those, not to get into some gender stuff, but that might be one of those male-female things. I always use the excuse I have a Y chromosome, so.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, doesn't always work, but I try to use it. So I guess my next thing I'm going to ask you sort of answered it a bit, but how long have you been kind of a gamer? I mean, at what age did this kind of grab you, if you want to kind of expand on that?
Well, I played a lot of games as a little kid. One of the stories Dad always tells about me is when I got very, very upset. I was probably 4 or 5 years old. Got very upset with my grandmother for not letting me win at Uno.
Okay.
So ever since then, I've been, you know, a little geeklet. I've been playing, I've been learning, I've been doing what I can. But really, for the non-Parker Brothers board games, it would be probably 4 years ago. Pandemic was my gateway, and mm-hmm. there it all went.
Right. And you're saying Catan. It always seems to be this, there's this, you know, kind of group of games that got a lot of people into it. Mm-hmm. I mean, my story's a little bit different, but that seems to be the ones that really have gotten everybody into it. And it's kind of,
so I'm going to be the bad geek here. I'm actually not really a fan of Catan.
Right. Well, you know what? You're not the first one that, you know, that I've kind of heard that. I mean, I've even in our board game group, we've got several people, you know, they like it, but they are so burned out on it because they just played and played and played and played and played it. You know, that it, you know, it doesn't really necessarily appeal to everybody. I mean, I actually have it too, and I think I've just played it one time just by myself to see how the mechanics worked and look kind of fun. And then we go to our board game meetups and stuff like that, and sometimes they break it out, but I never get involved in it because I'm always playing something else. So you're not the first one I have heard say that, you know, they're not huge fans of it sometimes.
Yeah, Catan, you own it to own it because it's a part of a collection that, it's not really a requirement or whatever to have, but it's a collection that at least I feel like I should have in case I'm ever introducing someone to the hobby and they say, well, I've heard of this game, you know, what is this Catan thing people talk about? You know, mm-hmm. I want to make sure I have it.
Right.
But it sure stays on the shelf a lot.
Right. And I've noticed a lot of people, because, well, there's so much stuff out there, and we'll probably talk about that, you know, a little more as we get into this, but God, there's just such a plethora of games anymore now. It's almost kind of mind-boggling to kind of keep up with it, I think. I mean, like I'm just saying, with the one that the board game group that I've been involved with that kind of inspired this this podcast, I think most of them I've been to, I've hardly played a lot of the games you know, more than once in some cases. I mean, it always seems to be new ones, and there's so much stuff coming out. So, but
yeah,
that's good.
It's dizzying.
Yes,
honestly.
Yes, it is. It is. You know, what's good, what's bad, and having to rely maybe on like this blog that it looks like you're starting to get some direction, you know, on as to where you kind of want to go with it. So I guess my next thing is, you know, what was, you've kind of talked about a little bit, but maybe, you know, elaborate a little more. Like what was really the big inspiration to really start this blog? Where do you really want to go with it?
Lauren and Jamie Cunningham are friends of mine, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. We were sitting around probably a month or two back talking about the reviews that they were going to have for their Kickstarter for Transylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we went home that night, I kind of hopped online and I started looking around, and there are a ton of great review sites out there. And I got to looking at it and I said, hey, I think I can do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right, right.
And it kind of percolated for, you know, a month or so. And eventually I just kind of ended up reading I don't remember whose article it was about blog hosting platforms. Saw one that happened to be crowdfunded on Kickstarter and said, well, plainly this is a sign, and started the blog.
Okay, I gotcha. All right.
That's how it came about, was just, you know, kind of looking at Father Geek and Indie Cardboard and everybody out there who puts out so many amazing things,
mm-hmm.
and going, you know, I could be one of those people. I feel like I have things to contribute that people aren't saying yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really want to work with these people and, you know, create this great thing for the people that are coming into our hobby, you know, make it as welcoming as possible.
Right. Well, so that sounds like a good plan to start with. So I'm just kind of looking at what you've got on your blog, and you're saying you're a newfound knowledge of Kickstarter. So I don't know if you want to kind of elaborate on that. I kind of like to focus on that stuff a little bit, because that's kind of an area that I'm digging my nose into all the time, and a lot of people that are in my gamer group too. It seems to be a really big focus of where people are looking for games these days.
Yeah, Kickstarter is an amazing platform for people who are launching games. I'm a little bit of an addict. They asked, today's Board Game Hour topic happened to be Kickstarter. They asked during Board Game Hour how many games we had backed, and I didn't have the exact number then. But up until this week, the number for me is 31 board games within 2 years, I think, on Kickstarter that I've backed.
Okay.
And the number will grow by 2 this week. Transylvania launches and Crash Games Yardmaster launches, and I definitely am getting in on both of those too.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm. Well, I can totally agree with that. I mean, you know, if you've listened to our previous episode, you know, we did do an interview with Jamie and Lauren from them. So, yeah, I'm very fired up about that game. We played it quite a bit, and it's pretty popular, you know, in my board game group.
Really, Kickstarter's a fantastic medium.
Mm-hmm.
There are entire companies, Greater Than Games is one that really comes to mind, that have done so much just starting out with Kickstarter, because mm-hmm. that's really where Sentinels got its start. And now they've got this big one that just finished up for Sentinels Tactics that I actually got a chance to look at on Joko when Christopher was kind of demoing it and playtesting it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got the other one that they launched, and I'm sorry, I cannot remember the name of it right now, that they're getting ready to deliver. You've got an entire board game company that is committed to quality mm-hmm. and excellence that's come out of it. Stonemaier Games is another one. Jamie Stegmaier, of course, with Viticulture and Tuscany
mm-hmm.
and Euphoria,
mm-hmm.
which...
Right.
Euphoria is currently my crack. I don't own it, and Lauren and Jamie do, so whenever game night comes up,
I'm always
in on a game of it.
Oh, wow. I haven't tried that one. I mean, Viticulture is obviously one. That one's actually pretty popular in my group. I've played that quite a few times. I like that game a lot. It's fun. So I think what's kind of interesting about that, though, because there's one of the gentlemen, one of the gaming stores I go to here in town, where he hosts a couple of our meetup events there, has some reservations though about Kickstarter, I guess, about, he thinks it's seems to him it's kind of risky. So I mean, maybe just like you're saying, you have some personal, have there been any that didn't fly, or is that something you see kind of as a concern Do you understand what I'm saying? That, you know, people going, well, guy, I can't believe I'm going to put, you know, money into this. Isn't it going to and it funds and then the people don't follow through and that kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, as opposed to going through your normal route to develop a game, you know, if you're like, you know, Wizard of the Coast or, you know, Fantasy Flight or something like that.
Well, and some of this is probably going to be slightly controversial because Lord knows it was during Board Game Hour today. My first thing about Kickstarter is if the creator of the project, when I look at their profile, if it says first created, zero backed, you can't get me to touch that project, mm-hmm. not with mm-hmm. a 10-foot pole.
Okay.
And it's not the first created that turns me off.
Right, okay.
Zero backed.
Right.
There's a plethora of games that allow you to get in on it, even at the $1 level, just to get updates.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Kickstarter creators, and I'm not one, so this is an outsider's perspective, but I feel like Kickstarter creators, it's very important for them to have the insider's perspective, to understand what it looks like to see a project go from backing to, you know, in development to production to shipping,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
from that other side, to know what it's like to sit there and wait and sit there and get the update that says, hey, we're ahead of schedule, or the all too common update that says, hey, the factories in China are shut down for 3 weeks because of Chinese New Year. This is going to delay the shipping of our project till then, till mm-hmm. this date.
Right.
And
right.
I do have a project out there that I did spend $100 on, and that was the entry level of the game, that has been delayed, and I'm actually starting to get kind of unhappy about it. Funded, I guess, the end of January 2013, and mm-hmm. we still haven't seen it. It was projected for November of that year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's a very miniatures-heavy game, and I understand that there's a lot of production concerns with something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, what game was that? Because that sounds kind of familiar to me for some reason.
It's not probably the one you're thinking of.
Okay.
The one that I'm actually currently complaining about is Kingdom Death Monster.
Okay, all right.
And it was very popular. It's kind of a boutique horror game. And when I saw it, I saw the passion that the creator had for it. I thought, oh, this is going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
But really, my criticism at this point in time is I feel like his passion and the insane amount of backers he received, he raised $2 million and change
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
on this Kickstarter.
Wow.
I really feel like his passion has kind of carried him over to the point where he's trying to add so much and do so much for this project
mm-hmm.
that he has, at this point, overpromised, and he's very much hyped this up. Hey, I'm adding this to the game. Hey, I'm adding this to the game. Even in updates as recently as 2 or 3 months ago,
mm-hmm.
which is still well past when it was supposed to be delivered. And he's promised so much and hyped this up so much. And yet I'm sitting here 6 months almost past when delivery was supposed to be
mm-hmm.
with nothing in my hands and going, man, I think I would have preferred if this had funded just at the very, very basic level to where I got the board game that you knew you were going to produce.
Right. Yeah, so I guess that's some of the risk that kind of happens with some of these things, though, isn't it? So it's kind of a, like I said, you said it's a great way, but that, you know, you kind of given the perspective there that there's also some risks and some goofy stuff that can kind of happen sometimes, too. I mean, one of them I'm kind of thinking of, one of the members in my meetup group, was the Ogre game that Steve Jackson did, the, you know, the retool of the little mini game, you know,
when the box ended up being so big it was mm-hmm. bigger than a suitcase.
Yes. So, but you know, that I think that's kind of cool what he kind of did there, it seems like, because what did he fund for that thing? It was like millions or something for that thing. And
yeah.
So he kind of went crazy with it, and he's still actually producing the thing. I mean, it's not a cheap game by any means, but
yeah. And the thing about Ogre 2 is that was kind of a relaunch. It was the retool, the special edition, whatever you would like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, they did a great thing with that game when they brought it back. But again, it was something where it got so huge
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and you know, it is kind of a concern, you know, at least having listened to someone getting ready to launch on Kickstarter, you know, what if we blow through stretch goals, which, of course, is an amazing problem to have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, what do we do then?
Right.
And I think that Christopher and the guys at Greater Than Games had it right. Sentinel's tactics ran out of stretch goals a full $100,000 before they stopped gaining money, before they stopped funding. And there was a point where they just cut it off and they said, hey, we have no more stretch goals. We want to get this game out to you guys on time and with the highest quality possible. You know, if we add anything else to it, it's going to cause production delays. It's going to cause you guys to be unhappy at us. And I think at a certain point, that was the wisest decision that could have been made.
Right, right.
And I have to say that I respect them an insane amount for doing that. There's a certain point where it's great to add stuff to your game, but you have to cut it off or you have to revise expectations, one or the other.
Right. So, like I said, I think that's still something that's kind of the monster or good thing or whatever you want to call it that kind of disseminated, I guess, from, you know, all this Kickstarter stuff, you know, and games kind of going that route, you know. But I think it's also like you, I think the thing too is it's given some avenue, maybe some very creative people, an avenue to get something out. Hey, I got a really good idea. This is kind of cool. And gives them kind of a means to, you know, get it out to the public or whatever. Or maybe somebody was, you know, bother him saying, you know, you ought to, you know, make that game and sell it. It's great. You got a great idea. So that's the good thing I see from it.
And I mean, even, you know, 3-4 years ago, I wouldn't have known how to go about getting a board game published.
Right.
I mean, do you mail it off to Parker Brothers? Do you, you know, what do you do?
Right.
I mean, it's not like there's this process that's been around for, you know, ages, like with a book submission where, you know, you get an agent, you submit it to an editor, you know, this, that, the other. There's really none of that. There's no definitive guide to, you know, here are people who are looking for board games. There's no writer's market for board game creators.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true. That's true. And that, like I said, there seems to be just this explosion of them, you know, later. And, you know, I got into them at kind of a young age, and I started with some of the Steve Jackson ones, like Wizards, and I talked about that in my first episode of my podcast, the very first one. You know, so I was into a lot of those kinds of things, the SBI games. I don't know how familiar we were with those. Kind of got away from it with a little while, then kind of got back into it. Now it's just there's so much stuff, you know. It's just like it's just an, you know, or exploded everywhere, and which is great. I mean, it just gives you, but then it's like, you know, you really got to pick and choose, don't you? Like, oh, I want that game, I want that game, I want that game, I want that game, you know, but, you know, where can you go? I mean, one of the gentlemen in my meetup group is really big collector, and he's just got an insane amount of stuff. And I mean, and he, you know, I don't think there's enough for him. And he, like, seems to me like he has everything. You know, oh yeah, I played that. I played that. I played that. I played that. You know, but which is great. And, you know, fortunately, he's one of the ones that supplies a lot of the games that we play in our meetup group. So, but I don't know. It just seems like there's almost too much of it in a way. But maybe that's a good thing. It gives you a lot of choices, I guess.
Well, anymore, the members of our meetup group will kind of message each other on Facebook with Kickstarter links and go, hey, how does this look? Or, hey, are you in on this? Or, you know, whatever it may be. Of course, Lauren's a huge Seven Wonders fanatic. And
it's a good
Across
game.
The Stars was funding for their expansions and everything on Kickstarter, and he didn't see the original one. So, you know, I kind of pointed it out to him, and we were talking about it, and he goes, yeah, I'm funding it. You don't need to get this one. Okay, you got it.
Right, right. And so I think that's kind of the neat thing that's kind of happening. It looks like with your blog and, you know, maybe some of the podcasts and things that are kind of coming about of this, it looks like it's turning into a good way for all of us to kind of connect and communicate, you know, oh, this is good. You ought to look at this or try this game out. It's really fun and that kind of. So it seems like this big network's kind of growing from it, which I think is kind of needs to kind of happen in some ways, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Dice Tower's done a great thing with like the video reviewers of board games, but one thing, and this has been a conversation that I've had with a couple different people on Twitter for 3 days running now, there's nothing like that for a text-based reviewer right now.
No, there isn't.
And I've been doing a lot of cross-linking where I can. You know, when I see a different website or a different reviewer do something on a game, you know, I'll try and make sure that I at least include it in a weekly roundup. Or like Club Fantasy just did their Board Game Awards last week, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, people saw that, got there, you know, took a look at what they thought was awesome, because the only way we're going to discover things is if we help each other do it.
Right, 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 exactly. So it seems to me like there's kind of this new medium or something kind of missing that, or a void or something that needs to be filled, I guess, that some of us probably need to start doing, you know, so that people can see the stuff that's out there and go, God, look at all this great stuff there is to play.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to give a plug here to Board Game Links. It's kind of almost Reddit for board game content creators, mm-hmm. be it reviewers or whatever, because there's an upvote system for board game news, and you know, you can just kind of take a look and see what's hot and what's trending. Just, you know, flip over to there, you know, once a day, once every couple of days, and see what's in the top five, take a look, see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Today in Board Games is another really good one that kind of aggregates into a daily digest style, just full of links to where you can look and see who's reviewed what or what's come out.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, there's no like text-based, you know, go back to the 90s here, there's no text-based web ring or anything out there right now.
Right.
And I think we're kind of looking at the genesis of that on the horizon over the next probably 6 months to a year.
Wow.
So we'll see what goes on.
Right.
Even I don't know right now.
Right, right. Well, it's like I said, it's a lot of new territory with some of this. Yeah, that I think I'm following both of those on my Twitter. That's the thing I've noticed, you know, since I started this podcast. What I've been trying to do is tweet as much as I can. So when I see interesting stuff, I like to try to throw it back out. So kind of scratching each other's backs, I guess, in other words, you know.
Oh,
I see
you
something.
Have to.
Yeah. But I'm really making it a point with my the Twitter account for this podcast to try to do that as much as I possibly can. You know, and constantly retweeting or finding something or whatever, and trying to make mine really active, you know, as much as I can, so I'm kind of staying on top of things, hopefully. Because I want to get those things out there when something's really good. If we like it or whatever, then I like to promote those kinds of things. You know, it's just like Lauren and Jamie's game. I mean, I love to promote that. The gentleman, this Andrew Rader that I had on my first podcast for his Evolve game, you know, and that seems to be generating quite a bit of interest. I mean, I've gotten a lot of people that have listened to that podcast and said, God, I'm getting that game. You know, this little looks fun. So I don't know. One of the backlashes I'm starting to see, but it's a good thing, is I'm getting some people listening to it and they're saying, you know, darn you. And I'm like, why? And they go, because you're going to cost me a lot of money, because you're getting me, I want to get that game and I want to get that game. I don't know if I want to keep listening to your podcast. If you're going to keep, you know, sending me all this stuff because you're just going to get me too addicted. And I go, why? Hey, that's what we're supposed to do, I guess. So.
Yeah, I mean, it very much is kind of a community virus. If you get one person excited about something and they're posting on social media, sooner or later, two or three or four people will, you know, see that person's excitement and go check it out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it just kind of generates into this shockwave. Marvel Dice Masters is a huge example of this just from this last week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen any of the heartfelt anguish that has gone on Twitter for the people that can't find starter sets, but...
Right. Oh, I've been following that. Yes, I
have.
Oh,
mercy.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I find it kind of incredible that I can sit here and, you know, obviously I'm one of the privileged ones. I figured out that I needed to go to the Hastings in my town post haste to grab this starter set. But I find it incredible that I was able to, the next morning when I wanted to find one for my giveaway, find one on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And then the two people that I'd been talking to the previous day, you know, poke them on Twitter and go, hey, real quick, it's on this website, you can order it right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I know that one of them actually managed to grab it. So I just find that level of technology and interconnectedness amazing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess what I'm gonna throw you into the hot seat here a little bit, but so what are your favorite types of games? I mean, just maybe in general. And I hope you know what I might mean by that. I mean, it could be, I don't know, you like Euro-style games, you like, I don't know, card games, whatever. I mean, you got a couple of favorites or something.
So I definitely love worker placements.
Okay.
I have no idea because it doesn't really seem like a genre that me as a person just kind of looking at my personality type would like. But there's something about a worker placement that really kind of lets me relax and let my brain just sink into the game. So I'm currently in a love-hate relationship with the Agricola iPhone app, because there's very few people that will sit down and play Agricola, that are kind of in my circle. And of course, Jamie Stegmeier's Euphoria is another really big one that I've hugely enjoyed over the last few months. And if I can remember the name of it very quickly, Asking for Troubles is coming out on Kickstarter, I think, next month. And I am trying desperately to get my hands on a review copy for the blog because that actually combines a worker placement with this kind of wrinkle in time wormhole logic where you send one of your workers into a wormhole or one of your ships, I suppose, since it's more of a space-based starship game, and two come back. And if you run into each other, there's all these huge problems.
Oh,
But
cool. Cool.
yeah, so just kind of the worker placement and all the innovation taking place in that genre. Because, of course, you've gone from Let's Build a Farm, and Agricola is a great game, but it drives a lot of people nuts because the themes of traditional worker placements have been so dry. You know, you've gone from that to stuff like Lords of Waterdeep, which really introduces a little bit of intrigue and a little bit of, you know, hurt your neighbor, help yourself, to Euphoria, which is, of course, this insane dystopian society where really it does feel a little bit like you're playing a worker placement that, you know, in kind of the 1984 or similar genre. And then you've got this insane kind of what I would almost consider next generation in Asking for Troubles, which, hey, you know, all I've seen on it is maybe a three paragraph preview, and I'm super excited.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so it seems like you're really involved. I might have to kind of keep bringing you on the show a little bit, because it seems like you got your hands in some of this stuff, and those are some of the things I kind of want to do. Is that introduces not only people in my group who tend to listen to it, but then also some of the audience that I'm starting to build for the podcast. So I'm gonna throw you in the spot again and just
Okay.
say, what's your top five all-time favorite games?
Oh, mercy, top five. No particular order. Seven Wonders is in there. Lauren turned me on to Seven Wonders, and actually, at that point in time, they then had to get the game for me for Christmas this last year. I would say probably Takenoko's on there. I love the theme. I love how it's executed. And I think I kind of have the bad feeling that you're about to see a theme with this, because I'm apparently a closet Antoine Boza addict. Because just thinking of what my top list will be, I'm pretty sure at least three of the five will be his games.
Okay, I gotcha. All right.
Golly, let's think here. What is in the collection out there that I enjoy? I'm going to give a shout out to Plat Hat Games. Mice and Mystics is an amazing co-op, and we have so much fun playing it. That's definitely in the top list there. What's at the table lately? I'm going to go ahead and give my kind of worker placement slot in that list. I will say Jamie Stegmeier's Euphoria makes top five right now. And again, just beautifully designed, beautiful components. So much fun to play, and kind of a non-traditional victory mechanism, because you don't win the game by scoring the most victory points. You win the game by getting rid of your influence tokens first.
Oh, wow.
So instead of it being a, okay, did you fulfill this condition? Yes. Did you feed your workers? No. Here's negative three victory points. Instead, it's more, you know, well, how long can I hold this plan close to my chest before everybody else notices?
Oh,
And I
cool.
have to, you know, kind of blow this out of the water here. So Euphoria definitely takes that spot, though I think I actually have to end up with two worker placements in my top five, because the last one, what would round out for me, I think this is five, yes it is going to be Sulcan, the worker placement based on the Mayan calendar.
Oh, wow.
Both for innovation and design, because it's got these great interlocking wheels that turn, and as you turn, your workers move, which actually indicates and represents the calendar. But also, I don't like expansions for games as a general rule. I feel like if you're going to publish a game, make sure what you've got in the box is what you mean for the game to be. But the Tribes and Prophecies expansion for Solvent, I've only gotten to play it once. We picked it up on Tabletop Game Day, actually, at our friendly local game store. It adds a fifth player, but it does so much more than that. It actually kind of adds... It almost adds a little bit of a Civilization feel. Where you have a special power for the tribe that you're playing. And it also adds prophecies, which create kind of a time of difficulty for taking a particular action during a turn. So be it harvesting food or, I don't know, building structures, for instance. Prophecies really kind of creates a new wrinkle and a new challenge. So, you know, as a general rule, I don't like expansions. But, oh my gosh, Tribes and Prophecies for Solkin.
Oh, cool. Cool.
So that'll be my top five.
Well, it sounds like, at least with that one, the way you're describing it, almost totally almost changes the game in a way. So maybe if the expansions kind of do that a little bit, add so much that kind of maybe changes the dynamics, but maybe not upsetting the core principles of the game. Those are good ones, I suppose.
Yeah, and I feel like Solkin is complete with or without the expansion, which is really part of what I enjoyed about it is, yeah, it adds a fifth player, but the fifth player is definitely non-essential, and it does make the game a lot harder because there's a lot fewer spaces when you consider another 3 to 6 meeples on the board, you know, competing for all those resources, all those building spots. But Solkin was complete without it, but with Tribes and Prophecies, it really does wrinkle your brain in whole new ways.
So here's my last throw you under the bus question. You knew this was coming.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So what? I'll make it easy on you. What beer goes good with all five of those games?
I'm actually gonna one up you here, and it's the beer that will actually go with kind of, I would say, board gaming in general, or my blog in general, or I will say those five games in general. And it's going to be Stone Brewing Company's Farking Wheat Stout, Farking Woot Stout, sorry. it's made by Stone Brewing Company with the help of Drew Curtis, who founded Fark.com, and of course Will Wheaton. And the idea is that it is a beer made by people doing what they love. And of course, Will's thing is it's not about what you love, it's about how you love it. It's a beer made by people doing what they love, in a way that expresses how they love it so much that it just has to go perfectly. Because that's what If You Give a Geek a Game is for me. It's expressing how much I love it and sharing it out to everybody else.
Oh, great answer. I don't think I've tried that one, so we're going to have to definitely take a look at that or whatever and see if we can throw that in. That's a good answer for that, though. So I guess we'll start wrapping things up here a little bit, but I guess what we might want to end on is just kind of the following. So, you know, you mentioned some of it anyway, but I would say within the next month or so, what are a couple of Kickstarter things that you are really looking forward to backing? You kind of mentioned them already, but maybe we can just reemphasize those one more time. But maybe like coming down the next month, maybe two or three games you're really excited to back.
Of stuff I'm really excited to back, I would definitely say, of course, Transylvania Curses and Traitors. It launches May 1st, so I think by the time the podcast airs, it should be well and truly launched.
Yep, it will.
Lauren and Jamie are, of course, personal friends, and they have done so much work into this game. There's so much heart and so much soul that is going to come out inside those boxes. Of course, I've been a little bit behind the scenes playtesting, kind of helping tweak, and this game is definitely their baby, and I'm so excited for it. I will definitely give a shout out to Crash Games. Yardmaster is launching, I guess that's, well, from the date of the interview, it'll be tomorrow. So it's launching April 29th. And I've seen so much Twitter hype on this game. I've seen so many amazing reviews so far. And I'm checking very quickly to make sure when the game that I'm thinking about throwing in third is going to launch, because I want to say this one's slated for June, but I want to make sure before I go throwing this particular game under the bus. And it doesn't say. I want to say Ophir is launching on Kickstarter, if I recall correctly, mm-hmm. sometime in June.
Okay.
Summer 2014 Kickstarter campaign.
Okay.
And again, seen so much wonderful hype, seen, honestly, the cover art that they just launched for it last week is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And while it's a pick-up-and-deliver game, which is a genre that I'm normally kind of hit or miss on,
mm-hmm.
they actually have a super awesome kind of market that goes on with it. And it creates a new wrinkle that definitely takes this game from, oh, well, yeah, you know, here's that, to how many times can I get this on the table in a weekend?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, right.
So kind of two immediate and then one in the very near future, I would say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, those are good choices. I mean, I'm definitely the Transylvania one. I'm really fired up about that one, actually, because we've been doing a lot of playtesting with it, too. And I had a blast interviewing them, and I totally agree with you. You know, they're very passionate, and they're really pouring a lot of their heart and soul. And I love to see somebody doing those kinds of things. So yeah. I'm going to sell stuff like that and talk about that when I see that kind of thing.
Oh, and I guess I do have to shout Asking for Troubles again. I just caught the Kickstarter launch date for them is May 21st.
Okay.
So.
Well, we'll have to keep our eyes on that stuff. So,
yeah, I've got links for you, and I think pretty much everything I've just mentioned. So.
Okay. Well, good. We'll have to throw that. I'll definitely throw that on my webpage. So, you know, Morgan, I really want to thank you for coming on the Board Games and Beer podcast and talking with us about this. Boy, you had a lot of great information that you bestowed on all our listeners. And so the other thing I would like to say, well, how can people get a hold of you? You know, maybe the name of your blog and Twitter or any of those sorts of things.
Sure. On Twitter, I am at Give a Geek a Game. My blog is called If You Give a Geek a Game, which it's just that simple, ifyougiveageekagame.com.
Mm-hmm.
Also the same, if you give a geek a game at gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always looking for people getting ready to launch on Kickstarter. I'm happy to review games.
Mm-hmm.
Email me, tweet me, we can talk about that. I definitely want to give a shout out, because I know that the stuff that content creators do is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that, you know, sending your baby off into someone stranger's hands to, you know, play through
mm-hmm.
and hopefully not rip into shreds can be an absolutely panic-inducing nightmare.
Right, right.
So, you know, I understand how hard that is to, you know, go to a content creator like me or like someone in the Dice Tower Network and go, hey, will you review this? But, you know, at the very least, just talk to me. Even if you don't want me to review it,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm happy to at least post a crowdfunding alert, you know, get people out there talking about it, hype it up, you know, get the story up, Board Game Links, because that's the very least I can do for someone who is putting their heart and soul into a game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, reviews, press releases, whatever it is, give me a shout. I'm absolutely happy to do it.
Great, great. Once again, Morgan, I really want to thank you for taking your time out of your day to speak with us, and we're definitely going to have you back on again, I think, at some point.
Oh, I very much enjoyed it.
Okay.
This is a blast.
Okay, great. Well, once again, thank you very much, and like I said, we'll put all that information that you mentioned will go up on our website, which is bgbpodcast.com. Anyway, Morgan, I want to thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. This was fun.
Oh, sure was. Well, like I said, we'll definitely have to have you on again.
Okay, welcome back. So I thought that was a really interesting interview with her. She really had a lot to say. I mean, a couple of these games and things that she was actually mentioning on there I thought were really, really interesting. The one that kind of really caught my interest was this Among the Stars game, I thought, which looked kind of cool, where you're kind of building this space station or whatever. So, you know, kind of looking, they only got about 18 hours to go on that thing, but you know, that I thought that looked like a really cool, you know, game to kind of get involved.
And it looks like the general public is also in agreement, because they've gone well over their goal. Which, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not much into the space games, but I know that they are very popular. It was one of the first games that people introduced me to after my gateway game of Settlers. But, mm-hmm. you know, they're popular, they do well, and mm-hmm. I'm happy for them.
Right. So, but yeah, that was a great interview, and I we're definitely going to have to bring her, you know, back around or whatever to talk about a lot more of this stuff. But, yeah, she had a lot of cool things to say. And, you know, Transylvania was one of her big ones, and then the other game that she mentioned was this, you know, Yardmaster game, which is coming on the 29th, which is another Kickstarter game that she was very, spoke very highly of. And Zolkin was another game yeah. that she had mentioned that looked really cool. I mean, listening to her talk about it and stuff, I mean, she was, as you heard, she was really into the big, into the worker placement games and stuff like that. So that sounds really cool. But anyway, so what we'll do with that is we will head off into our next segment, which we better talk about some beer, shouldn't we?
Well, beer, spirits, wine.
Yes, exactly.
You can't talk to a wino about beer. It doesn't quite work.
Yeah, exactly. Here we go. So we are now into our beer and game segment. So we're going to look at what beer goes with what game, but maybe what we might want to remember, we're always going to try and highlight a beer. And I think we're going to go off of Morgan's suggestion this week, which is the Stone Farking Wheaten Woot Stout.
Yeah, it sounds definitely like something I want to try. And again, I don't drink beer, so.
Right, right. So, you know, and I obviously it looks like, you know, what Will Wheaton has had a big hand in the designing of this kind of, into the design of this beer. So, boy, 13% alcohol, it's some pretty strong stuff. We're not messing around with that beer, are we? But that's a good beer to go with people that play games, I think.
I would foresee that being really good with Cards Against Humanity, because the drunker mm-hmm. you get, the more fun that game
yeah,
becomes.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, this would probably fit in that really, really well. So the other thing I think we want to mention too, this unfortunately this ended yesterday, but we had this really cool event here. It was called the Strange Brew Festival. And so there was a lot of the local breweries, and they came up with these really, I would say, interesting names yeah. for some beers. I mean, I don't know. Maybe
some of
pick
them a bit horrifying.
Yes, maybe pick a couple out there that maybe pick one you thought looked good, and maybe one that you said, nah, I wouldn't touch that with a pole.
Okay, I will start with the I wouldn't touch it with a pole. That'll give me a little bit more time to review what I did like. I would not touch it with a 10-foot pole, which was the bubblegum ale. I am not a bubblegum fan as is, and I just can't imagine putting it into an ale.
Yeah.
As for the... I actually have two I wouldn't mind trying. The Cucumber Kolsch and the Pomegranate Kolsch. But I also like Fruli, which is a strawberry beer. So
right,
that's
right.
why I kind of gravitate towards those.
I gotcha. Boy, I don't know. There's some really interesting ones. I don't know.
That sushi porter sounds interesting, too, although I'm a little afraid.
Yeah. I don't know. I think maybe as much as I like sushi, that one doesn't sound very appealing to me for some reason. Boy, I don't know ones in there that look kind of interesting or whatever. Breakfast beer?
I don't know. I kind of see you drinking the Belgian Icky.
Yeah.
But that's because I know what you like in regards to bio.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other one, I like it, but it just seems odd to me. I don't know. That peanut butter. They have a peanut butter stout that... I don't know. You know, just, it's really some very interesting beers here, though, and I just kind of wonder if that is ever going to go to market with some of this stuff, you know, that they came up with. Okay, so what we'll do our little game here with Isabel, and we'll throw under the bus a little bit. So we'll just kind of go back and forth here a little bit. So remember how we kind of play this game. It's more along the lines that pick a game, and then you throw a game at me, I'll throw a game at you, and we have to come up with a beer
okay.
that goes with that game. So who wants to start?
I will throw one at you.
Okay.
Jeff's favorite game, as he has declared throughout gaming times, is Candyland. What do you think Jeff should drink with Candyland?
With Candyland?
Watch me die next gaming round.
Right. I think I'm going to have to go with a peppermint patty porter beer, I think, for that one.
Really? Yeah. I'd put that more with a quiz game, like a trivia game.
Quiz game? It's either that or the bubblegum one. I don't know which other one.
I would much rather drink the peppermint patty with that one.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, that's what I'm going to go with that one. That's the one I'm going to go with. Okay. So I'm going to throw Carcassonne.
Carcassonne. Probably something stouty. I would go with the new one, that Woot Stout.
The Woot Stout. Okay,
yes.
Going to go with the Will Wheaton Woot Stout. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, it's your turn.
Beezer Weezer.
Beezer Weezer. Oh, so we're talking about a trivia game here. Mm-hmm. Oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do with a Beezer Weezer? How about a bourbon barrel double bock? Yeah, since...
I would agree to that.
So, and mind you, people, I'm going to tell you, we are taking these strange brew choices as our beers. So if you're going, where in the heck are they getting these things from? But these are actual beers, so no, we're not making this up. Okay, so I've got to come up a game with you, don't I? Boy, I don't even know if you played this one before, but we'll see. I'll throw a sci-fi one at you. How about Awful Green Things from Outer Space?
No, I haven't played that one.
So, you haven't played that game?
No.
So it's an old game, but it's basically a spaceship.
Oh, but I know it would be perfect for it. This is what we used to make at the bar a lot when I worked at the bar back in Canada. It was a drink called Zombie.
Zombie?
And it was green.
And it was green.
I
would not be surprised if they had a zombie ale or something like that, too.
If they haven't, someone will come up with it soon.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I guess it would be one more to me and one more to you. And
yeah. I will go with an old classic Munchkin.
Munchkin. Oh, Munchkin. What are we going to go with? I don't know. I think that bubblegum one might go good with that.
Really? You're totally ruining Munchkin for me now.
I'm not trying to. It's just the first thing that came to mind. I don't know.
I'm like, sorry, friends. I can no longer play Munchkin now.
Bubblegum ale. Bubblegum ale. I don't know. I don't know why. It's just, that's what came to me. I'm going to go with that one. Okay, so what are we going to do? Let's do... how about Small World?
Small World? Probably that Belgian icky with spices.
Belgian icky with spices. Okay, well, I think that'll probably work. Okay, so we're going to add anything else there. So there's our beer and game segment. And so what we're going to head off into next is our next segment, which is Back into the Vault. So, Isabel, you are going to have to give me a hand to start pulling on this chain so we can get this door open.
Okay.
All right? Yeah. Grab. You got a hold of it?
Yeah.
Got a hold of it?
Yeah.
Pull. Okay. Pull. 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 You got it? You got it?
I don't know why you're getting all uppity. I'm not having any problems with this.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm going to have to go to the gym a little bit more. Okay. So, anyway, here we go. Back in the Vault. So, I thought what would be very appropriate for today for our Back in the Vault segment is, remember, this segment we are talking about old games that probably most likely aren't in print, and I would probably say a great majority of our players maybe are not even a customer who've never played the game, but that's okay. That's part of what I'm doing. I'm trying to disseminate that out to people that look at these other games that we have that we can play. So the game for today is Freedom in the Galaxy, which I don't know, Isabel, if you've played that one or not.
No, which is interesting because a lot of my friends are Star Wars geeks, and you walk into their homes and it's shrines to George Lucas and Star Wars. And
right.
I'm sure they're all, if they are listening to this, they're probably going, Isabel, you have seen this. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. So it's obviously, I know you can still get your hands on this, but I mean, it's definitely was very much inspired by Star Wars, and it has a huge Star Wars feel to it. Mm-hmm. So I just thought this, for the May the 4th Be With You Day, this would be the perfect game to kind of talk about. We had some epic games of this. You know, one of the, it seemed to be the focus on some of the games we're picking, these old SBI, well, they made tons and tons of games. And a lot of them now, obviously, are collector's items or whatever. But basically, you had characters, and if you saw the characters and the character drawings and stuff, like, you look on the box, you know, well, that's Luke Skywalker.
I definitely saw the likeness between Star Wars, and which is interesting for me because I'm very torn when it comes to fan-based things, such as fan fiction and such. I tend to like the originals and not like the remakes, but this seems like it's a good homage to Star Wars, and it's not necessarily a ripoff, but just an honoring of the genre, which is nice. So this is something I could get behind and not necessarily grit my teeth and be like, I'm doing this for my friends, I'm doing this for my friends.
Yeah, exactly.
They owe me so much afterwards. This is something I could actually enjoy, I feel like.
Exactly. So, I mean, even if you look at the cover art on the box, it looks like Luke Skywalker.
With a mix of He-Man.
Yeah, exactly. So they did some stuff, but it was a very interesting game. So there's a lot of dynamics going on. You had ships, and there was two factions, basically. You had the Rebels and kind of the Empire kind of thing. But, I mean, it was this huge, you know, massive map that you could play the game on. And what was interesting with it was it had it in, you could play it either by a system.
Yep.
So it was basically them competing, and you know, you could do all these different things, but it really had a cool Star Wars feel to it and a lot of interesting mechanics to it. And then they had it by these quadrants you could play by, and then you could play the whole stinking map if you wanted to. I don't think we ever attempted that, because that would have taken weeks, I'm not kidding you.
Really?
To probably, well, yeah, it was a very long play game. I mean, even when we did these little, we would do a couple of systems, or we would do one of these little quadrants, and that would kill an entire afternoon.
Wow.
And sometimes we wouldn't even finish the game. But, you know, it kind of came, I don't know if you ever played, the Lord of the Rings game.
I have played it once.
Yep. The old SBI one?
With yeah.
Really similar stuff. The artwork on the cards, mm-hmm. and all that stuff was really, really similar. But I don't have this game. And now, after, you know, knowing what today was and deciding...
Does our fearless leader have it?
I don't know. I'll have to ask him about that. I don't know. I don't even know if he has this one. I would be surprised if he does, but...
Locked away in his vault?
Yeah, exactly.
Where we're not allowed
yeah.
to go?
Yeah, exactly. And it just seems like some of these ones that I've been picking for these ones that are out of print... are a little more monstrous in scope. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, sometimes maybe some of the meetup groups or whatever, this is definitely, in my opinion, if you're going to do it, either do one of the smaller ones because you could probably get through it. But if you're going to do anything bigger, you'd want to set up, you know, we're going to play it every week or something like that because, you know, to get around. I don't know, most of the people might be into that. It seems to me that's kind of the focus games they want. There's longer played stuff, but it seems to be a little quicker with fun mechanics and stuff like this, and it does,
yeah,
but you know, it's your standard with the little cardboard, you know, counters and all that kind of stuff, but not the hexagonal map, you know, you did before. But the people that put it together, the writing and stuff was quite good on it, as I recall, and so on. But definitely an out of print game, and I think Avalon Hill wound up they did do a rehash of it, so if you can find it or whatever, but I don't know.
Well, I did see that there were several copies, and before you mentioned the game mechanics and everything else, I was considering getting it for my brother, but knowing my brother's attention span, I highly doubt he would like it. So if you're listening, honey, you might want to let me know if I should get this or not, since your birthday's coming up. And by the way, it's been nice knowing you. I have a feeling my brother's going to kill me since I just referred to him as honey.
Oh, yeah. I think he'll get over it.
I don't know. Young teenage boys, they don't necessarily like their older sisters calling them pet names.
Oh, that's probably a good thing. So anyway, I think you want to add anything else to that game or whatever? But, I mean, like, it sounds like you might be interested in playing it. Like I said, I'm going to have to get my hands on a copy of it or whatever. But you can certainly find it, like, at Board Game Geek or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would play the shorter version, but mm-hmm. I think I kind of am like most gamers. You know, if it takes too long, then...
Mm-hmm. You're going to lose attention span.
You're going to lose attention span, and it better be something that's meant to be a long-play game, such
right.
as... you know, an RPG or something like that. Otherwise,
right.
I just can't get into it with board games.
Right, right.
Arkham
right.
is the longest I can go.
Right, I gotcha. That totally makes sense. So anyway, that's our that's the Back in the Vault segment we have for you on this episode. So what we'll do is we will head off into our final thoughts and so on and wrap up the podcast. Okay, welcome back. So we are going to wrap up this episode of the Board Games and Beer podcast. I would really like to thank Isabel for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been fun.
Yep. And we'll be back on the next episode, certainly with more game talk, beer, and interviews. So do you got any, like, parting thoughts or anything that you'd like to end with?
I do. I kind of wanted to mention this earlier, but I got a little cut off by Vale. But I definitely really like the fact that Morgan is really representing for us ladies. So I remember when I started gaming over a decade ago, there were very few women, and you know, it was kind of stifling. I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoy playing with the guys, and I've always been much of a tomboy, but you know, it's nice to see women gaming and actually mm-hmm. coming in not as the girlfriend, but actually
right.
coming in as their own and actually gaming
right,
as they want
right.
to.
Right,
it's
right.
actually nice to see that estrogen amongst the testosterone, and I'm sure the boys like it too. Something pretty to look at.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, it's a good mix of things. You make a very good point there, I gotta say.
Come on, ladies, we gotta take over the world.
Well, we got in this big thing about one of the games we were playing when we were playing The Agent yesterday, and I mentioned this before, but I just The problem is the Y chromosome, which I'm sure you can attest to.
Right? I don't know. There's some pretty problematic X chromosomes out there, too.
Well, I'm just saying it's one of those things that kind of came up with that or whatever. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the show. So we'll start giving you some information on how you can get a hold of us and if you've got any questions or anything. So, Isabel, how can anybody get a hold of us?
You can contact us via email at boardgamesandbeerpodcast@gmail.com.
We are also on Twitter at @BGBpodcast_game.
Or you can always visit our wonderful website at bgbpodcast.com.
Okay, and so that will also include our show notes, links, and all this other information, the email, Twitter, and so on can be found there. We are also on iTunes, and we can also be found on Stitcher. So once again, I'd really like to thank Isabel for joining this week.
No problem.
It was great to have you here, and I really enjoyed having you on the show.
Thank you.
We'll